I can tell you with a certainty, is I know whom I have believed it. And I know that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. I know that for a certainty. You'll find that in 2 Timothy 1:2, but you also find it in that little red book on the back of the pews called a hymnal. One of the beautiful hymns we have in that book. When Pastor Lazier asked me a couple of Sundays ago to do this, you know, I started off thinking about soul winning. And I got to thinking about different methods. Now, one of the earliest methods that I ever really got to watch and be somewhat a part of was what I call the Pastor H method. I have never in my life been around anybody that witnessed like he did. He was a mad dog about it. He had took two of the young teenagers that was in this church at this time, and they can verify it. I know they're not here tonight, but they can verify it. Took them on an airplane flight. While in midair, he cut the motor off. He looked at him and he said, "Now, if this doesn't start back, where you spend an eternity?" Now, you might say, "Well, that's crude. That's unusual. That was Pastor Aish." Needless to say, they got saved. But he was ready to go. He just wanted to make sure they were ready to go. I seen him in Haiti as we was flying to Haiti on our first mission trip, the church's first mission trip, speaking to a Haitian, and he had a translation book of French Creole. And he was trying to witness that guy translating into that book. Now, the guy looked at him just as bumfunkled as everybody else was, thinking, "What are you doing?" But he had that initiative. He had that burden. And I think I can visualize in my mind that even though Pastor H may be in poor health right now, if he would happen to be in the hospital or if he's got a captive audience, he is witnessing to them people. Because he loved God that much. And I think it spawned a lot of good things. I can remember we had a pastor's study class, 5:30, two mornings a week, 5:30 in the morning. I was in that class. It changed me. I can remember Jimmy Waddell, Jackie McQuarrie, every Wednesday night going witnessing. That came from that. So, soul winning to me, I look at it in a different way. I'm going to do it in a parable form tonight. And we all know what parables are. It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Jesus spoke in these a lot. Now, a lot of times after he got down the parable, his disciples looked at him like a calf looking at a new gate, thinking, "What did you just say?" But he was translating what? The kingdom of God. He was telling him. And, you know, I think he probably got frustrated at times saying, "Why can't you see this? I've told you over and over, why can't you pick it up?" Now, we have the advantage of having the Scriptures and looking at the Scriptures and say, "Well, I see what he meant. Why didn't they see it?" They were in the moment. But, you know, we live in the moment too. Do we carry out what Jesus said then? So I'm going to bring across a parable tonight. And using this parable, I'm going to talk about something that I know about. Now, as I said, I'm a carpenter. Now, I'm able to see something before I build it. Now, that's a blessing and a curse because others can't see what I see. And it's hard to explain to them, "Well, this is what it's going to look like." And they say, "Well, I just don't see it." But I already see it in my mind, and in my mind's eyes, I know what procedures to go to, which route to take, and how to get to the point I want to get to what I want to build. And it's easy for me. It's just, I see it. Perception. I perceive it before I build it. And I think sometimes we've lost that perception in the church because a lot of people looks at soul winning, they see it as a daunting chore. That's what? Somebody else's place. That's the pastor's place. That's the assistant pastor's place, associate pastor. That's somebody else. They're called to do that. I'm not called to do that. Now, I'm going to beg to differ with you. In this parable, I hope you see we're all called to do that. A lot of times people say, well, that takes me out of my comfort zone. Well, bless our hearts. You know, I've heard, had people tell me, I'll never do that. I'm not going to stand up in front and teach somebody. No, you never will. Because on your own, you're not going to what? You're not going to do it. You will stay back in your comfort zone and never leave that comfort zone because it's safety there. If I fail, nobody's going to know it. And we missed opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. I believe in my heart that God affords us opportunities. He gives us windows of opportunities. He gives us doors of opportunities. He gives us garage doors of opportunities. He gives us big openings. It's whether or not we choose to what? Go through it. Step into it. If we're not looking for those opportunities, then we'll never see them. We don't perceive they're there because we're not looking for them. We're not looking through the eyes of faith to start with. Now, I'm talking to Christians. This just ain't somebody that's lost. This is reaching the lost. And then lastly, a lot of people see this as a challenge. Now, you can take that one or two ways. You can see it as a challenge as, man, you know, I'm hard-headed as they come. If some, I thought that was coming from Karen, not my sister, but when somebody tells me, you know, that can't be done, that just gives me an incentive because it makes me think, well, if the Scripture's true and it plainly says in there, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, then why can't it be done? So it's a matter of perception. How do we perceive it? How do we perceive God? Do we see Him as being weak? Not able to help us with a challenge? How do we see Him? How do you perceive Him tonight? All right. I said this is going to be a parable. So I'm going to start off with a, I know you're probably sitting there wondering what this is. It's not a person. Now, what do you see? Good, you're perceptive. Cedar log. Now, looking at that cedar log, what do you see other than a cedar log? Now, through the eyes of a carpenter, I see a lot. I see what that can be transformed into. I can see, you know, Karen and I built three houses together, and that being able to see stuff, sometimes it's very fortunate we made through three houses and still married. Our first house, I was sitting and thinking one day, and I drew it out on a piece of toilet paper. Now, some of you more astute will figure out where I was sitting. But it's a good thinking place. And, you know, I took that piece of toilet paper to the bank and said, this is what I got in mind. And he looked at me and he said, all right. And you know, with that perception, you see things beyond what that is. Now, upon first look at that, you think that, well, this is all right. I mean, I can do quite a bit with this. But you always got to walk around the tree. You always got to see the backside of that tree. So if we was to turn it around, what do you see? About 3 years ago, going on 3 years ago, I was sitting out in the woods one morning turkey hunting. Now, there is a thing called early blur. We used to see this hunting video back when I was in elementary school. Whenever they didn't have nothing to teach us, they'd show us videos. And I always liked this video because it had to do with Tennessee Wildlife and all this stuff. And there's a thing called early blur. It's that transition period in the morning when it's dark and it's starting to dawn, and that transition of light. In your eyes, sometimes you have to focus to that transition. There have been many people shoot goats, cows, everything. On this video, a guy shot his Jeep because he thought it was a deer. Stranded him right there. But it's called that early blur. We think we see something, but it's not what we thought we saw. So that perception is off. Now, when I was hunting, and Billy, if you will, put that picture up. I was sitting, and this is that very tree. And as the sun got up, and I got to noticing things around me, I looked and I thought, wow, what in the world is that? And I thought, I said, Ty, take a picture of this. I took it to work and I told them, they was all asking, well, what done that? What done that? I said, a Wampus cat. Now I had to have fun with it. And they said, and that always leads to the question, well, what is a Wampus cat? And I said, it's a can of bogus. That intensifies the question, well, what is a can of bogus? I said, a haint. Well, what is a haint? A Wampus cat. And it's just that repeat, repeat, repeat deal. But actually what did this was a woodpecker. One of the pileated, the woody woodpecker looking woodpeckers. He had took, and I'm telling you, you can look at it here after church, but you can also see it right there. He literally tomahawked that wood out of there, all the way to the core of what he was after. Now, what that caused in that tree is decay, because, you know, eventually it's going to die out because there's nothing protecting that inner cell. Now, I checked this before I brought it. I don't think there's any critters in it. I said it'd be bad if there's a snake piled out of that thing, because y'all accuse me of... But even though that's got that decay in it, even though it's damaged, I still see possibilities. I still see that it can be used for what I want to use it for. It still has, I perceive that it still has a possibility. It could be cut around. Anybody knows what they're doing as far as a sawmill, and we got one of the best sawmill guys there is around anywhere, I think, in Steve Myers. I mean, he can do a job. But he could work around that, and he could get the boards out of that that I see in my head that what I want to use it for. Now, what do you do with it after that board you get it? Well, once it's sawed up, it still looks rough. But I still see that I can use it. I perceive that if I dress that thing down, if you look at it, this part up here has been planed. Down here, it's still rough. Got rough edges. Those can be cut away. It can be utilized still for what I need it for. There's still good in it. There's value to it. And cedar's aromatic. I mean, you smells good. Wherever you put it in, people make cedar chest and all this stuff for it. But it's still, even though there's signs of that decay, which can be cut away, even though there's signs of a little roughness in it, it can be planed, it can be processed, it can be changed. Now, this is all culminating to a final product. Something that we can use. Something that is of worth. Even though it still needs work, even though it's got to have a little TLC on it, even though finish is applied to it, it can still be utilized. It can still be used. Now, once it's done all that, once I've worked it down, once I've made it, once I've got it to where I want it, then it goes to a finished product. Now, some of you more astute people in here are going to look at that and say, That's cedar. That's walnut. You're right. But wait for the rest of the parable. A lot of times we have a finished product. We utilize it, proud of it, showpiece we can put in our house. This piece here is made for when you retire from the day, you come in what? You can hang your hat on it. You can sit down it if you like, or you can go about it. It also has a compartment in which you can store things. Very useful piece. Not only that, but it's a conversation piece. You know, people might look at you, you really made that? Well, I'm offended by that. I saw it. I perceived it. I knew what it was going to look like before I finished it. So, of course I made it. I made it for a purpose. Now, actually, to be quite honest with you, I made that this week for the purpose of tonight. Because I believe that God works still today. He works in ways that at times just amazes me. Absolutely amazes me. Now, I told you this was a parable. And once again, a parable is an earthly story, but it has a heavenly meaning. Now, y'all very well know that Jesus was a carpenter. I'm proud of that. I happen to believe that Jesus was a good carpenter. I think anything he did, he done good. After all, he was there at creation, wasn't he? I mean, he was right there when everything was formulated, everything planned, everything made. Jesus was there. You believe in the Trinity, surely you got to believe in that. So Jesus was there. I believe that Jesus could take a piece of wood, could look at it, and he could say, man, I could make this out of that. That's the exact piece that I need. And I think he, oftentimes I've even said this in class and stuff, it had to be very frustrating even talking with Jesus at times, because he knew what? He knew what you were thinking before you even said it. How do you talk to somebody like that? How do you relate to somebody like that? I don't think you do. I think you learn from somebody like that. You know, a lot of times people say, well, I don't want to witness to nobody because I can't talk. I just don't have the words to say. And now, granted, I'm going to tell you this. You know, I use this old adage a lot. There was a wise old owl sitting in an oak. The more he heard, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we be that wise old bird? And a lot of times I think about that and I think, well, because my wife gets on me quite often about being very quiet and not talking a whole lot. And sometimes, I guess, I listen. One of the things that has been beneficial in my life is being around, through growing up years, being around men that were Christian men, but yet they were very gifted in what they did. Now, I could learn more by watching them, by keeping my mouth shut, not giving my opinion at the moment, but watching them. And, you know, I think in soul winning, we do the same thing, don't we? I think sometimes you can say too much. Sometimes you don't say enough. But I think sometimes if we listen, that is one of the best soul winning methods there is. Because once you've done the listening, once you had that person tell what's going on in their life, then you can what? Well, you know, maybe you need to try this. Maybe this will work better. But if we're rattling off all the time and not letting them talk, then we are defeating the whole purpose. I think Jesus was unique and gifted in that. Because a lot of times he didn't say anything. But yet he was what? Speaking very loud and clear. And sometimes we miss that. I think we, as I said, we have windows of opportunities and stuff. We have things that we can do and we can be. Karen, I tell Karen, she has got one of the best avenues as far as working at a school that there is, reaching young children. Because a lot of those kids come in there, you would not believe some of the stories she tells. I mean, it is sad. And I believe even within the church, our children are supposed to be or should be one of the main most things we are trying to win. Because, you know, wouldn't it be nice to be able to put Celebrate Recovery out of work? And if we had our children, which I think that's the reason I pour so much into it, if we train them up in the way that they should go and tell them, you know, one of the biggest lies, man, oh man, it irks me. One of the biggest lies Satan feeds people and they bite hook, line, and sinker is that you have to do this to experience it. You need to try this. You need to sow your wild oats. That is a lie straight from hell. What better witness is for somebody to stand up and say, you know, I didn't have that problem with that. I went through life without doing that. I didn't experience that. Now, thankful for the stories of people stand up that did go through it and God gloriously saved them. But far be it better if you miss all that. And the ripple effect that causes. Because one way or another, whether we know it or not, whether you realize it or not, you're being a witness. You're being either for the good or for the bad. You're being a witness. All right, back to the parable. Now, we're going to pretend like if this is a parable, this is a tree, we're going to relate this to a person. How do you perceive a person who's damaged, who's lost? Then, Jesus being the carpenter and the Savior that he is, how does he perceive that person? He says, they've messed up. They've done some wrong things. But I think I can save them. I think I can salvage that life. I think I can do something to help that person. All I need is somebody to witness to them. All I need is somebody to show them the way, to speak to them, even if it's just a kind word. You know, we plant seeds. We call it planting seeds, and somebody may come along and water. Somebody else may actually ever see the harvest on down the road. We may never see it. But if you never plant the seed the first place, how's it ever going to grow? So Jesus looks at this, and he says, I think I can salvage that, even though they've got this hole in their life. They've got decay in there. They've got things that can be whittled away. I think I can save that life. I can make it new. Then he takes it to his shop. A person gets saved. Okay. They're still rough around the edges. You know, do you think you change overnight? Absolutely not. I mean, you get saved, God forgives you, he casts your sin as far as the east is from the west, but still there's the what? There's the rough areas in your life. And there's still the flaws that we work on, flaws that, you know, we want to be worked on. Now, a lot of people, once the person gets saved, they say, well, I don't want to have anything to do with that because I may get a splinter. And granted, you might. You know, I've been in woodworking for 40-some years. And you would think after a while your hands got tough enough that I got a splinter the other day and I had to dig it out. I still get splinters. My hands ain't that tough. We may get splintered a little bit by helping somebody else out. But when we start seeing the smoothing out going on, and we start seeing God working on that, because are we the judge anyways? That's what kind of gripes me sometimes with even the church. You become judge, jury, executioner. And we say that often by, well, they may be on fire right now, but they'll what? They'll cool off. They'll fizzle out. It'll come back to reality. How dare us say something like that? When God can gloriously change, when He starts His work of smoothing out, He's got a finished product in mind. He doesn't see junk. He doesn't see the splinters. He knows that, you know, I got a place for that person. Now, in that finished product, even though as Christians, we look back here and we said, you know, I didn't want to fool that guy. We couldn't see the finished product. Jesus, the carpenter, did. And He says, I know where, I've got a place for that. I've got a place to put that. I can use that. Now, there are things that I think happens along our Christian walk. Now, like I said, maybe I don't say a whole lot, but I perceive a whole lot. I see a whole lot. And sometimes I think we get to the place in our Christian walk where, well, I've done enough. It's time for the young people to do something. And, you know, one time back years ago, I was the chairman of the board of CE. Now, this was years ago. This dates it. And we used to have what we call teachers' banquets. And it was an actual banquet that we would put on for the teachers, and it was an appreciation banquet. It's a nice thing. And, you know, I asked a lady one time, she had taught for several years, if she would happen to just speak a little bit about her years of teaching. That was the biggest mistake I ever made in my young Christian life. Because this woman brought a notebook, and I kid you not, it was this thick, brought it up to the podium, laid it down, and went, I think it was day by day, she said it was year by year, of everything that she had ever done. And, you know, I sit there and thought, this ain't what I thought was going to happen. I wanted you to talk, and I kind of thought about Laser when he asked me to talk this. You know, he might have been sitting there the same thing. What was you thinking? But needless to say, she went through everything. And I'm going to tell you, I'll be honest, and I would be less honest with you if I didn't tell you this. First thing come to my mind, well, that's your reward. You can take that, you can put that in your little place there. You can sit down, and you can retire. You can be done. Now, I have a problem with that. And some of y'all that's Bible theologians in here and know more about than I do. I don't know that there is the word retirement in the Bible. I don't know that God ever says where you can retire from service. You know, as far as the world, I gave up on retirement a long time ago. I told Karen, I said, when I'm in the casket or you burn me, whatever you want to do, I'm retired. I'm done. You can say I'm retired. I love to work. I love to woodwork. And unless something that strickens my health to the point that I can't do that, you'll find me doing that. So when people say, I retired from that, I no longer need to witness, I no longer need to do anything like that, they place themselves on the throne of their life. And they're literally telling God, you have no more use for me. And in essence, they're telling themselves, I sit on this throne. Now, if this is representative in this parable of a person that's been changed, what God has created that person to be, how he has made a finished product, who are we to sit on the throne of our own life? When whose rightful place is that? It's God's. If that represents us, who's supposed to be on that throne? Who's supposed to be in charge of that? Who's directing that life? It's not us. It's not me. You know, years ago, there was the license plate that was on a lot of vehicles. God is my co-pilot. That's a bunch of baloney. God's supposed to be the what? Pilot. He's the pilot. So God's saying, if I'm to be on your throne, you're not finished until you're where? To your home. You're not finished until I'm finished with you. You don't get to call that. Man, oh man. How many times we can do. Now, one of the, I know in this church, person that I have always held in highest esteem, Charlotte Wilson. Man, that woman has worked and still working. You know, up until pre-COVID and all this mess we got now, she was faithfully every Sunday in our classroom upstairs. And, you know, that speaks volumes to me. Because just as work, I retire when I die, should it not be the same way with my faith? Should I not be working until I die? Until God calls me home. The other thing about this thing too is the mirror. When we look in that mirror, what do we see? If we're on the throne of our life, we see our reflection. We see what all we've done. Now, I don't know about you, and I hope I keep this in my life, but I don't think I've done near enough. Nowhere near enough. I think I'm still way behind. After what God, what Jesus did for me, there's no stopping. I'm supposed to keep on going. There's no retirement. The picture or the face that we should see when we look in the mirror of the throne of our heart is Jesus Christ, the author and finisher of our faith. It's not us. You know, often I think if we was to look in that mirror too, who would Jesus see? Do we have that reflection of him? If we do, we should be soul winning. Because best of my recollection of all I've read in the Bible, Jesus was a soul winner. He went about seeking the unsaved, the lost. Because he said, why would you stay or look for the ones that's already saved? You know, even of the scribes and Pharisees, he spoke about them, and he said, you're just like a whited sepulcher. You're all shiny. You're all glossy on the outside, what people see, but inside you're an empty what? Tomb. Now, I don't know about you, but if Jesus said those words to me, I would go run and hide somewhere, I guess, because it had to cut them to the quick. So our reflection in that mirror should not be of a whited sepulcher or a throne of our heart that we're sitting on, that we're in control. If He's in control, our call is to tell others about Jesus. Our call, our duty, is to seek the lost. Our call, our duty, is to be vocal about our Lord. If we're not, then where are we at? If God can't count on you to do this, what can He count on you to do? We have effectiveness that we are missing within the church. You know, I'm pretty frustrated sometimes about the lack of faith, is what I'm going to call it. A lot of people in church can go out and do a lot of stuff, but they can't make the church on Sunday. I have a hard time with that. I would be more fearful going out. I'm not fearful. I'll rephrase that. God doesn't give me a spirit of fear. Now, he helps me use common sense, but He doesn't give me a spirit of fear. I ain't afraid. I ain't scared. I know that God's in control. No matter what this world may come about, I know that God is still in control. You know that there's actual, if you come up and if you happen to look at this, you're going to see little flaws in it. It's man-made. I made it. It'll have little flaws in it. It'll have scars. And if you open the lid and if you look in the bottom, it's that piece of cedar. Was for a purpose. Made the bottom of the cabinet. You know, we carry scars even after we get saved. But I think they're there to remind us of what God did for us. And if it reminds us of what God did for us, why in the world would we not share that with somebody else that has those same scars? That can't vision, can't perceive, can't see that. Now, like I said, you'll find flaws in this, but in our spiritual bodies, in that Christian body, you know, we have flaws too. We're not going to be perfected. We won't have that perfect body until we get where? Heaven. But God gives us a promise. He said, I got a special place to put you. I've got a spot made just for you. But I wonder sometimes if He thinks, are you trying to bring anybody with you? Or have you got to the place where I need to be? I want to sit on that throne. I want to be that. Luke 11:23 says, He that is not with me is against me. And he that gathereth not with me scattereth. Whether you perceive it or not, whether you see it or not, you are a witness. It's either for the good or the bad. But you witness every day. You tell somebody what you believe in. You tell somebody who you are. You tell somebody whose you are. And if we're not doing it for Christ, that only leaves one person. We're doing it for Satan. If you're not with me, you're against me. I don't know if this is what Pastor Lazier wanted or not. I'm not a Pastor Ash. I can't do his method, but I know whom I have believed. And I'm persuaded that he is able to keep that which I committed unto him against that day. And I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And witnessing to me is perception. What do I see? Do I look through the eyes of faith or the eyes of fear?